Hello, everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life, a little bit of both, because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, where we feature articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org, and we're funded by the wonderful Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. If you want to learn more about the PNWA, you want to sign up for some of their fall classes if you're in the Northwest, I'll be teaching one, two, three, maybe, especially on memoir, teaching some memoir classes for them. If you want to sign up or just learn about it, you can go to pnwa.org. So I can't verify this. I don't know if it's true, but I heard once that the average age of the New York Times bestseller, of the authors on the New York Times bestseller list, their average age was 55. Again, I can't confirm this, but it wouldn't surprise me if it was true. I heard Larry McMurtry talk. He was the first author I ever heard talk, the author of Lonesome Dove, and among many, many others. And he said he thinks that writing is a largely middle-aged profession. And I do think that's true. Certainly, when I go to writers' conferences, a lot of the people I meet are people who have lived full lives, full adult lives, and now have come to writing at the second half of their life. There are exceptions, of course, but this is often true, which is why I think today's guest is so appropriate for this show. Dr. John C. Robinson is a clinical psychotherapist, but also holds a doctorate in ministry, as an ordained interfaith minister, and is the author of many books about aging and the value and power of aging. He's author of The Three Secrets of Aging, Bedtime Stories for Elders, if you consider yourself an elder, and most recently, What Aging Men Want, which is kind of a companion piece or follow-up, if you will, to the huge bestseller from the 90s, poet Robert Bly's Iron John. And I guess apparently it's not all downhill after 40. Who knew? Let's find out what Dr. John C. Robinson thinks. John, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks a lot. I appreciate your intro.
Well, it's my pleasure, John. It really is true that when I go to writers' conferences, I just came back from Portland, where I talked at the Willamette Writers Conference, huge writers' conference, 800 people, and a lot of them are over 50. A lot of the people who show up for that, it's a very grown-up thing to do. And it's a creative time. Things are not over at this point for people. I assume you agree.
That's such a beautiful point you're making. You know, when I graduated from graduate school, my PhD, my faculty wanted me to go off to some university and start teaching. And I just knew in my heart I didn't have anything to teach. I hadn't lived enough. I hadn't seen enough to do anything. Yeah. So I spent the next 30 years as a psychotherapist just really trying to understand the nature of the human condition and my own life as well. Why do I feel the way I do? You know, what are these developmental stages of adulthood all about? But now that I'm 69, and now that I'm here, even though my body is getting a little ragged, like car parts falling off an old car, I'm just feeling so much deeper. You know, I feel like a tree, you know, with all those tree rings. When you're very young, you only have three rings, you know, but when you get to my age, you got all these rings, and each of them is a year of experience you can go back to. It's just a lovely, poignant time.
Yeah, I think aging can be great. For me, I wouldn't go back a single minute, honestly. I cannot be more sincere about anything. Where aging can get into trouble, where you can get into trouble with the aging process, is where you calcify in certain beliefs that you don't. I think that's where I see the most suffering in older people is just an intense calcification of thought, essentially, that leads them that they will not let go.
Aging really is a profound transformation of self and consciousness. It's in a sort of a death and rebirth process. You need to let go of the old you, the one you've been for the 30 or 40 years, the one you're so used to being, so that something brand new can grow from you. But if you hang on to that old, then you become, like you say, ossified and rigid. You become like Kronos, who who ate his young because he was not interested in new things happening.
Yeah.
So our work in this is to face aging head on. And curiously, or maybe not curiously, not too many people at first want to talk about aging. It's one of those topics that is either too scary or too depressing or too far in the future for most of us to want to talk about. And boomers especially, you know, with their eternal optimism, think they're going to conquer aging, you know, with exercise or diet or creams or hormones or whatever.
Yeah.
And but it's really not going to happen. And what, when we finally get past that place of trying to overcome it, then we discover that it is a journey instead. In fact, it's a pilgrimage of profound significance.
Well, yeah, I think it's also it's learning to have a more authentic relationship to the body, because you run into trouble. I've run into nothing but trouble the more I identify with my body. It's a great, I'm happy for it. I take care of it. It gets me around. I've enjoyed using it. But, you know, if I lost my hand, I'd still be me. I'd still be just as much me. And if I lost the other hand, I'd still be just as much me. And for me, a lot of getting older has become a de-identification with just my physical form, as much as I enjoy it.
Yeah. So my work is really about the tasks and the gifts and the growth potential of aging. And one of the tasks really is to discover the language and the wisdom of the aging body. The body knows how to age. The body actually knows how to die. We get in the way of it by imposing our agenda. And that's when our symptoms get worse, and we break hips and tear ligaments, because we're not supposed to be running marathons at 80 unless you're a uniquely qualified person. What I find especially interesting about this phase too is that we are now entering, it's just amazing to me, a brand new developmental stage in the human life cycle. I mean, when I was born, the average lifespan was 67, so that, you would get a life, get married, have a job, and a couple of years after you retired at 65, you'd be gone.
Right.
All recorded history, only 1 out of 10 people made it to 65. Now nearly 8 out of 10 will, and if you make it to 65, you've got 17 to 19 more years of life. So the question is, what's it for? It's not just to get old and ugly and die. It's a whole new stage of our development.
Yeah. Oh, it's beautiful.
So I find it very exciting.
Well, you know, one of the biggest obstructions to getting old is our ideas of death, I think. What we think it is, and in fact, I got to tell you, the more I think about it, and the more people I talk, because if you do what I do, which is one of the things I do, is I interview writers, and particularly memoirists, and often memoir deals with death, whether it's the possible death of the writer themselves if they've gotten cancer, or like in Cheryl Strayed's book, where it's the mother's passed away. I remain convinced that the story we tell about death becomes the story we tell about life, that what we believe death is completely affects the way we live our life on every facet.
That's beautifully said. That's beautifully said. And we bring our core issues to the dying process. It's the last stage of growth, because whatever your earliest, deepest, most essential issues as a human being are, whether it's abandonment or fear or loneliness or betrayal or whatever, that's what you're going to feel in the last phases until you work through it. And what I find most interesting is that the older I get and the more I've worked on myself, the less afraid I am. I'm beginning to sense, I think that our consciousness changes as we approach that final horizon. And so that the consciousness of aging and the consciousness of the other side begin to leak in. And we have a sense that it's not so bad. That's something that it's a stream that if we could relax into, might just be okay. And we could offer our children an example of how to live and how to die beautifully.
Everybody, I went through a string where I talked to a bunch of people who had near-death experiences. Quite a few, including the author Richard Bach, who's a great guy. He's another Washingtonian. And he had one recently, which was intense after he crashed his plane. Oh, he did. He wrote about it in his latest book. And we talked about this. We had a whole long conversation about it on this show. And I had a friend who told me, I have two friends who had the experience, and each of them repeat the same thing, which was Richard Bach's thing. And I think this is certainly relevant for writers, which is that they had the choice of whether to transition or come back. It was a choice. And I've always felt that was true, because my life feels like a choice. Everything, yeah. I have to make choices constantly. I can't stop. Even if I wanted to stop, I can't. And it made sense to me that death itself would be a choice. We think it's not because we're told it's the worst thing that can possibly happen to you. But I think even that's a choice, maybe.
I think that's a lovely metaphor for every stage of life. Every stage of life, we have a choice. Do we go forward and risk our new self, risk, you know, something brand new happening, or do we cling to the past and try to be, build a fortress of security in our ego? And I think that the same cycles happen, you know, all the way through life. And so the death experience is one more cycle of the same thing, which is why it's so important to work on yourself.
Yeah, I just don't think you can be afraid of it and live the life the way you really were meant to lead it. And and so now your most recent book, What Aging Men Want, The Odyssey as a Parable of Male Aging. You describe it to me as a sort of an extension, a continuation of a book I read back in the 90s, the early 90s, Iron John by Robert Bly. Talk to me about this book. So what do aging men want? What do we want?
That's a wonderful
Besides
question.
Besides a red sports car.
Exactly, and a younger woman. Don't men just want to, like, retire, play golf, fish, and travel, and volunteer? And
Guy, shoot myself. I hope
anyway,
not.
Don't all these older guys say they're busier and happier than they've ever been in their lives? Well, after carefully interviewing 40 men I knew well, so I knew they would tell me the truth, I discovered that happily ever after may be what men say about retirement, but it's not how they feel. Because the work we have to do in aging is complex and it's difficult. This book is so fascinating to me because Odysseus is this aging warrior coming back from this 10-year war. He's trying to come home to his family who he's been estranged from for so long in this great war, which really is a metaphor for adult life. So, but it takes him 10 long years to come home and multiple tasks. And what I came to understand as I looked at this, as we would look at Iron John or any other symbolic myth or a fairy tale, I came to see that every task represented a developmental challenge that he had to come to terms with for him to find his way home. And so it became a roadmap of a guy's journey from, you know, tough, male, independent, stoic warrior kind of guy, full of armor, to somebody with his heart open, who's able to cry, who's able to say how much he loves and needs and wants a life, and he wants to come home to his wife, and it took him 10 years to do it. It's just absolutely fascinating story.
It is a fascinating story, and what I think of whenever I hear it described is, the first question that pops into my mind is, what is home? Where is he going, really? What is home? I have my answer, but what is home?
Well, like every story, just metaphors that you have to answer for yourself. You know, what is home to you? What is home to me? What does home really mean? Yeah. And that's the power of these stories.
Go ahead.
Well, as you say, that's the magic and the power of these stories. Oh. Because when you take a symbol like that and you bring it inside your own life, you say, oh my gosh, you know, home to me really is, I just want to hang around with my grandchildren and play tracks on the floor because I love them so much. And I feel like I'm holding them in a way that I was never held as a child. It could be that, or it could be any number of things. You got to find out for yourself. And then that's your journey home.
Yeah. I write a column for Author Magazine, and I do it about 4 or 5 times a week. And a couple people asked me early on, cause I would do it a lot, and they always had a spiritual quality to them. So people say, how do you write them so often? How are you able to do them so often? And my answer, I mean, I have a lot of different answers to that. But one is, I start anywhere and just go home. That's all I do. I start somewhere far away from home in any subject. And then I know what home feels like. And I just try to go home. That's
it's
how
like
I write.
You get centered. You become very centered in your own being. And from that flows the truth that makes sense to you. Sure. The second secret in my book, Three Secrets of Aging, pertains to what you're saying, because it says that aging is a transformation of self and consciousness. That aging is really enlightenment in slow motion. It begins subtly and spontaneously, and as we wake up from the illusions of mind, we transition from personal identity, this person we thought we were, to a consciousness of the divine or of the universe that allows us to give birth to an enlightened elder in ourselves. See, this is one of the ultimate tasks of aging. It's not just getting old. It's like, wow, you can wake up and experience the world in such a new way that the adventure of aging becomes very exciting, very meaningful.
you talked about, you just said a phrase, the illusions of the mind, did you say?
Yeah.
All right, what is that? Describe that to our listeners.
Well, that would refer to this whole fiction we tell ourselves about who we are. It's identity, time, and story. I am John. I grew up here. These were my parents. These were my struggles. This is who I am. But it's all thought. And one of the things we discover in age is, well, after you retire, a few years after retirement, you discover that all that stuff isn't true anymore. Because I don't practice as a psychologist anymore. My kids are grown up. I'm not an active parent. All my friends that I had at work are gone because I've moved away. That whole belief system just dissolved. It evaporated. And so we have a choice. We can either hang on to it and try to say, well, I'm still these things, or we can let consciousness open up. And here's the crazy, amazing thing. When you become really conscious of consciousness itself, you discover that it's not just in you. You are in it, and it is the consciousness of the universe. The mystics have told us from the beginning of time that the universe is conscious and alive, everywhere saturated with this presence. And when we stop building a wall between us and it, this wall of identity, we discover we are it. And then it becomes wow.
Now, to my listeners who may be finding this far out, listen to me now. You're all writers, most of you. And most of you have had, I'm going to just take over just a little bit, John, and I'm going to let you back in. But most of you have written fiction. And if you've ever heard me teach, and probably it doesn't matter. I don't even know if I don't know you, but I know you've entered something called the flow, where you lose track of time and where your characters start talking to you. And it really is like you've met a friend and you're following the story as fast as you can. And you're not thinking about the chair you're sitting in. You're only thinking about the story. In fact, the story is more real to you than the chair you're sitting in. You've entered that flow. You've entered it. You've found it. You aren't making, you're just following it. What he's describing in consciousness now is that flow. That is the most practical experience most writers have of it, the most aware experience they have of it, because the experience of entering it is different than sort of bouncing around our days trying to solve all the problems of the world with our mind. But that experience of becoming lost in the flow is a practical, immediate experience of what this sort of mystical experience that John referred to as consciousness. Now, what do you think? Does that make sense to you, John?
Oh, Bill, thank you. You said it beautifully. I said it way better than I was saying it. Yeah, I mean, when I'm writing, I'm not sure who's writing because the hours go
That's
by
right.
and it's 3 to 4 or 5 hours. And I see,
get
up and my back hurts and my wife is calling me, hey, it's 6:30, you have dinner? So I put on my clothes again of identity, time, and story and go upstairs and see myself again. But that's, I was in another space, and that's the space of aging. That's why we love
that's the space
so
of
much, because they live there too.
Oh, if they were born, well, they just don't see. It's really a process of remembering. You know, kids come in and they already know all this, and then, you know, I don't want to say we, but you know, this has been going on for tens of thousands of years. But there's a sort of practice forgetting and trying to say, look, this is how the world works, and you got it. One of the things I love about kids on the spectrum, because my son was diagnosed on the spectrum, and a lot of these kids, they just don't want to play the game. They don't want to play the game the way they were told to play it, and it just throws a wrench into everything. And it's beautiful, although painful for a time.
It's the pain that we all suffer. I remember, you know, that moment in my childhood when I saw my brother, older brother, being the law professor he was going to be, and I'm the sort of the introverted mystic, and I'm without knowing it, I'm thinking, I can't do that kind of stuff. I don't even want to. But the family and the school and the environment and my peers, everybody said, in effect, you have to be somebody and you have to be somebody important that I didn't want to be. But one day I gave up on myself. What's wonderful about midlife is it allows you to recover the true self, who you really are, if you do that work. And about the late life passages, you get to discover this other side of yourself that now doesn't have to follow those rules, is free to recreate, reinvent yourself any way you like.
John, we have a caller.
Hey.
A caller would like to talk to you. I think I know who this is, although I don't see him. Jeffrey, is this you? I don't see you in our list here.
Yes, it is me, Bill. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Oh, my pleasure.
Another excellent and fascinating interview, Bill, to get better and better all the time.
Oh, thank you.
Hi, Dr. Robinson. I want to wish you unparalleled success with your latest book, What Aging Men Want, and you know what's on my next read list.
Well, thank you so much. That touches
you're
me.
Very welcome, sir. You're very, very welcome. You're doing great work. There's a great quote from Mark Twain which goes, writing is easy, all you have to do is cross out the wrong words.
And rewrite 20 times.
Question for you, sir, is what do aging men need to cross out in order to live the best quality of life in their later years?
Oh, good question.
Great
Jeff.
Question.
Yeah, what do we got to cross out? Yeah, no kidding.
Well, let me ponder that for a moment. What do aging men need to cross out? They need to cross out expectations. They need to cross out belief systems and standards. And they need to cross out anybody else's opinion of things so that they have a wide open field to grow something that's never been grown before in their soul, to let their soul shine. I think that's where I would start.
Yeah. You know, you said something really good there. You know, when I teach writing, what I say to writers, your confidence is your unconditional love for the story you're telling. And when we write, there's only one condition that can derail us, and that is what other people think. Paying attention, caring about what other people think will derail you.
And you know that's the hardest thing about writing, because you put your heart and soul into this work and you put it out there, and half the people ignore it, and other people get critical of it, and others, you know, think, what you're talking about. And you say, wait a minute. You know, and in some ways, I've often felt as if I'm just writing for myself, and now my job is to reach out to other people.
Yes, but you are writing for, you write to entertain yourself, and I assume, by the way, even though these are teaching books, by which I mean they have a point to them, and they're not meant to merely tell a story. You're trying to teach. I assume, and you teach it yourself. I know you have clients, and I'm sure you go and give talks and so on.
Yeah.
But I'll bet you get to that page and you find something that you did not think you knew until you wrote it down.
Over and over again. Yeah. I write about this stuff because I don't know what it is. And I want to understand it. And at the end of my writing, I throw away 2/3 of it, but suddenly a gem will appear and I'll say, my God, that's it. Where did that come from?
Yeah. It's good, isn't it?
It makes me so happy. Yeah. It's
just glorious. But you see, but that's I was mentioning those little blogs. I wrote them because I needed to hear what they said. I needed the advice. I needed the comfort that they provided. And so I'd finish them and I go, well, I feel great. Anything else that comes of it is all just gravy. Now, it turns out people did like them and they were helped by them too. But I really wrote them because I needed to hear what they said. And so I said it. It's almost like, John, you know, it's like I was talking to somebody about this. It's like there's two bills. I being Bill, there's the Bill who suffers and is uncertain and worries. And then it's like the Bill who never suffers is the one who advises him. That when I write, it's like there's this other Bill, I suppose it's my higher self, talking to him. And that's the one that writes the blogs to this other Bill who's all worried and concerned.
You know, that's really so true. Well, I this may be helpful to other people too. I did a lot of work with Ira Krogoff, who did the intensive journal workshop. And the journaling process was a dialogue process. You'd set up a figure and you'd have a dialogue with them, whether it's your father or your friend or Jesus or whatever. And once you get into the dialogue, the other guy starts saying stuff you don't know where it's coming from.
Yeah.
Really, it's obviously coming from the unconscious or the right hemispheres or someplace beyond. It doesn't matter. But you gain information just from yourself. You discover from yourself that you already know, you just didn't know it, and you find your own voice.
Yeah, you're really unlocking. I always tell writers, your job is not to have, you know, that's the problem. We think of intelligence like the kids in class who have all the right answers. What I've come to understand intelligence as is really just curiosity. My job is to have questions, and the answers will come to me. And then I get enough of those, I sound smart. But it's really just me being very curious and asking and asking. And the thing is, John, if I'm asking the question, then I can't be the one who's answering it.
Oh yeah, you know, I do an exercise when I'm stuck oftentimes, and I ask myself the same question over and over and over again. And each time I just write whatever comes up until I have 20, 25 responses, some of which are like, this is stupid, or I don't know what it is. And then by the end of it, I go back over it and I'll find 2 or 3 gems, you know, and I'll say, wow, okay, now I know what I want to write next. It's in you. We just got to get the observing critical ego out of the way so this soul voice can come forward.
Yeah, the ego really doesn't have a clue as to how to write. It thinks it does, but it doesn't, it can't help you at all. It'll worry for you and attack your enemy.
Expert. Yeah.
So you've actually now, it'll be due out in October, this October. It's coming out, your first novel. You've written your, you've taken your first swing, you poor man, at the novel called Breakthrough. So this is Breakthrough, a spiritual novel for the second half of life, continuing on your theme. So what brought this on, you fool?
Well, so two things. I began this novel 20 years ago and got about a third of the way into it and realized I didn't know where it was going. So I put it aside because I wasn't old enough to finish it. So then, you know, all these years later, I have these 7 or 8 books I've written about the stages of adult life. And I wanted to find a way to describe them metaphorically and psychologically in a story so people could read it and identify with it. So this is a story about a psychologist who takes on a new client. And the client is having these bizarre mystical experiences. And these mystical experiences begin to affect the psychologist's own state of consciousness. And then he follows this incredible journey of trying to understand, wow, what is this space I get into with this guy? And how? And then he goes off on a vision quest and comes back, and he goes deeper into this state of new awareness. And then he struggles with, well, how do I live my life from an awareness that I don't exist as what I thought I was? And I want to live this life of love and peace and ecstasy, but how do you do that in the world where everybody's running around like New York City streets, you know, yelling at each other? Yeah. What do you do with this kind of information? So it's a story I wrote that helped me think through the second half of life all the way to death.
Yeah.
So if your folks are interested in what are the tasks of aging in a kind of a fun and interesting and compelling story, this is a good one. And I'm hoping it brings to light my other work so that it can be, you know, a bit more fully recognized.
Sure. Well, and so it's coming out in October. Okay, and it's called Breakthrough. Are you going to do like a little book tour for it, do you think?
Oh, of course. Yeah, sure. I've got all sorts of plans to promote it.
Oh, yeah. Lucky that. Well, and so, John, unbelievably, we're coming to the end of our time. This was such a fast conversation.
Oh, my goodness.
I know, I love the work you're doing, and I'm so glad because I really feel the old, quote, no pun intended, the old view of aging is pretty useless, and I think that I think it's changing, and I think the work you're doing is a part of that. So I think it's fabulous, and congratulations on that. But I'm not quite done with you, John. I have one more question. So what I'd like you to do is finish this sentence for me.
Okay.
That is, if writing has taught me anything, it's taught me what? What has it taught you, John?
If writing has taught me anything, it has taught me to love my soul. My soul is like a conduit from the other side of it, of inspiration. And if I just shut up my mind and open that space, you know, stuff pours out of me. And I'm so incredibly grateful. And writing has given me this contact with myself that has changed me, that has made me a different kind of person.
Boy, I'll tell you, I think that's a beautiful statement. And I have heard that again and again from so many writers on so many who are at so many different stages in their writing life, that what they found in that experience just of putting words on the page connected them to something that was always there, right? I mean, it was always there, but we just didn't pay attention to it.
This is the reason we came. I mean, a wonderful guy named Maladomo talks about indigenous cultures and spirituality. He says we in their theology, you meet with the elders and you decide why you come, and then you come and you get born, you get into the world, and then you forget. And the clock is ticking, but somewhere along the line, you start saying, getting restless. I'm not doing what I should be doing. Why did I come here? And that's what you got to find. Why did you come here?
That's right. And, you know, I should say we are born with a fantastic guidance system. It's called our feelings. And if you are not really pointed in the direction you were meant to be pointed, you will be unhappy. It's brilliant the way it works. It just is absolutely as dependable as the sunrise. You will be miserable and be glad for it.
When you're depressed, it means you've betrayed your soul and your soul has fallen into sorrow. And when you are in touch with your soul, you want to dance on tables.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good. You know, it's not, it's, and it never leaves you. It will always make you unhappy if you don't do, if you're not in the right, exactly. Heading in the right direction. Right.
No, I all right.
Well, listen, John. Oh, thank you. It works for me. That's for sure.
Great.
Listen, best of luck with Breakthrough. I hope it is a breakthrough. And I hope we get to chat face to face someday.
Me too. You and I are obviously kindred spirits.
Yeah, clearly. All right, John. Thanks again.
Okey-doke. Thank you, Elton. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye. Oh, it's good. Connects you to your soul. To your soul. It's true. It's true. Your soul is the part of you that doesn't age and really is not even interested in your suffering in a way. It just loves you, loves you, loves you, and wants to spend time with you. All right, everybody. I'll be back next week with Mr. A.C. Fuller, who interviewed me a couple months ago, and I'm going to have him on. His new debut novel's out. He's very excited, and I'm interested to talk to him. In the meantime, go get connected to your soul and write something you love, because that is the quickest way to get there.